All right, welcome to the Free Stretch, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton. This is the Week 7 edition of the show, and as seems to have been the trend lately, it was a pretty eventful week around our football team. Not necessarily for great reasons, but for whatever the reasons, you get kind of that new lease on life feeling going into a game coming up on Sunday here in Tampa against the Cleveland Browns. Thank you for joining me today on the show. I am Bobby Fenton. Again, always love to be able to get in front of you guys and talk about the Bucks every week, and thanks to the Joes for having me on. If you want to email me or get a hold of me in any way, my email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com. That's bobbygameday@yahoo.com. Find me on Twitter at bobbygameday. Lots going on. Of course, we'll deal with the Mike Smith thing. We're going to deal with all the stuff with, I'm not going to get too much into the Atlanta game at this point, but I want to talk about a couple things in the Atlanta game, look ahead to this week, all kinds of things going on here on the Free Stretch, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. And Bill Curry, by the way, Tampa's first family of Ford, proud to announce a nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles, and this includes unlimited years, unlimited miles, plus a 10-year roadside assistance program, one-year complimentary service. You can see all of this at BillCurryFord.com. And it's Curry, I-E, so B-I-L-L-C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. Check out the website or go see Sean Sullivan. He's the new GM at Bill Curry Ford right there on Dale Mabry, just a little bit north of the stadium. Go check him out. You can receive the Joe Bucks Fan discount if you go see Sean and just mention the website, Joe Bucks Fan, and that'll be on top of the already transparent online pricing and the new lifetime warranty. Bill Curry Ford has proudly served this community for 58 years, which is longer than I've been around and longer than most of us have been around here, at least. So go check it out or go to the website, BillCurryFord.com, and check things out. And as always, there is no more ringing endorsement of Bill Curry and of Ford in general than me sitting in my Ford Explorer to record this show today, which I always enjoy, just my little office in here. Because I can't go in the house and make a big commotion. There's too much going on in there. I'd rather just have it all to myself, especially because I want to get into it. Sometimes I talk a little loud. Sometimes I might wake the kids up. But there's lots to get both excited and, you know, a little bit worked up about this week. So Mike Smith, no longer here. Everybody was clamoring for it. A lot of people thought he'd be fired at the end of last year. And now a domino has fallen. And I mean that, like, that's really a good metaphor for it, because he's a domino. And, you know, if the Bucks come out and everything just hunky-dory from here on in, oh, hey, yeah, Mike Smith, he was the problem. There's our scapegoat. We're fine now. But if things continue to not go so well, of course, he'll only be the first domino. And Dirt Cutter knows he's one of those dominoes that was standing right next to Smith, and he might get toppled over too. And I think that's the biggest reason for this, is because, you know, obviously there's no tomorrow for this coaching staff. It'd be one thing if they had the luxury to kind of let things play out, but Dirt Cutter knows he's probably going to get fired too. If you know, I mean, I don't know what the record needs to be exactly, or, you know, 8-8, does he get fired? I don't know. 9-7, but they missed the playoffs? Well, I don't know. 9-7, but they make the playoffs? Oh, yeah, then he probably stays. What about 6-10? Then fired. You know, who knows how the hell it's going to go? But Dirt Cutter knows if it doesn't get better, then everybody gets fired anyway. None of this will matter. And Jason Light's another domino. You know, how much will the Glazers tolerate? How far up the line does this go? We'll see. Now, I don't ever, you know, I don't feel good about anybody getting fired. That's never what you want. But watching the game on Sunday against the Falcons and just watching guys continuing to run all over the place, just wide ass open. My old football coach, Dom Siau at Jesuit High School, who's now the head coach at Berkeley Prep, I'm not sure he even remembers me. He might. But he used to say, when I played at Jesuit, it was the late 90s. And we had a quarterback named George Godsey. A lot of you might recognize that name. He went on to quarterback Georgia Tech. And then he actually ended up going into coaching. He was a coach at UCF with George O'Leary, who he played for at Georgia Tech. He ended up being the offensive coordinator for the Texans for a little while. Great guy, just a really good, like, nice, genuine guy, really smart, and a hell of a quarterback, obviously, to get to the level he got to. So I remember practice at Jesuit when I was in, again, the late 90s, and George would be playing quarterback, and we'd be running team drills and, you know, 7-on-7 or team with 11-on-11, whatever it was. And every once in a while, George would miss an open guy or something like that, like every quarterback does. And our coach, Dom Sia, would step up, and he'd go, George, there's three kinds of open. There's open, there's wide open, and then there's wide effing open. That guy was wide effing open. Throw him the ball! You know, it'd be a whole thing. And we'd be like biting our tongue, trying not to laugh in front of coach, you know. It was really fun. But that, it's true. There's three kinds of open. Receivers against the Bucks are wide bleeping open. I mean, it is. They're not just like, oh, they got to step on the guy. They're absurdly open. Like, every play looks like 7-on-7. And I know that the new NFL is kind of like that. Guys are more open than they've ever been. We talked about that on one of our shows before about how, I can't remember who it was, but I heard a receiver, it was a few years ago, doing an interview, and they were asking him, like, what's the biggest difference between college and pro football now that you're in the NFL? And he said, it's the definition of open. He's like, in college, I'd get open. Like, I'd be just open. He's like, in the NFL, like, the guy will be, like, just on the wrong side of you, maybe, like, on your shoulder, but he's still right there, but that's open. Like, maybe you have the right side of the field to him, and that's all open is, he said, but you're never separated. Like, you can never get separation. That just isn't how it is in the NFL. There is no open. And I was like, yeah, man, like, that's, you're right, like, next level stuff. Like, that's the NFL. And it's not like that anymore. Now you can get wide ass open. Doesn't matter. You see the Bucs games. It's not just the Bucs in their defense. I mean, you watch any of these games lately, and that's the way the NFL's been going. So I understand that. But even understanding that, we could all see, and one of my buddies was texting with me while we were watching the Falcons game on Sunday, and he's like, what do you make of this, man? I mean, how do we keep going like this? And I said, listen, I mean, I don't see how you come back from, and I was talking about Mike Smith in particular. I said, I don't see how you come back from this. I did not think he'd be fired the Monday after the game, or whatever it was. Was it Tuesday or something like that? But I was thinking, you know, I just don't see how, I mean, you can't, this isn't like a one-time thing. It's been like this for several weeks. So, okay, Mike Smith's fired now. I tweeted during the game, if you follow me on Twitter, at Bobby Game Day, I tweeted, yeah, Mike Smith is bad, but the players are bad too. Nothing has changed, okay? They have, and you can say, oh, addition by subtraction. All they have done is subtract one person. They have not brought in anybody new, either on the coaching staff or on the field. Mark Duffner, the linebackers coach, is going to be the defensive coordinator now. And that's fine. I mean, again, whatever. Mark Duffner is not, you know, doesn't have a ton of coordinating experience. His linebackers haven't been particularly awesome. No one on the defense has. But that's my point. It's not like you're bringing in something that's going to be a whole new deal. So what do you expect to be different? I mean, I expect improvement anyway. Even if Mike Smith was still here, I don't think they're going to look against the Browns the way they looked against the Falcons and the Bears. I would have thought that if Mike Smith was still here. So I think you'll see improvement. I think it's important to remember that it was probably pretty likely they were going to improve anyway. And not if they come out and have a good game this week to say, oh, see, there you go. Got rid of Mike Smith. All's well now. You can see what a difference. Because listen, here's the thing, folks. You know, I don't think Mike Smith did a great job as the defensive coordinator. The results obviously bear that out. But do you really think these guys are dumb? Like, do you think Mike Smith is, like, incompetent? Because I don't think that. And if dropping him, if it was as simple as, hey, let's drop Mike Smith and our defense is just going to be awesome now. Like, if you think any coach in the NFL is that bad that they're actively hurting their team to the point that the team cannot perform under their leadership when it otherwise could perform well, I don't really believe in that. I think the players are, I always think this, a majority of it. Sure, coaching matters a lot. I would never say coaching doesn't matter. And Mike Smith, you know, schematically, whatever was happening wasn't working. But every single one of these guys has forgotten more about football than I will ever know in my entire life. And all of us as fans, that's true for, okay? And I always say this when it comes down to criticizing coaches or coaches getting fired or anything like that. Just remember that, like, they're not idiots. And what he was doing may not have been working, but it's not as simple as, hey, we're going to get rid of him, and now we're going to be good. Because he was bringing us down that... You think he was bringing the defense down that far that all of a sudden they're going to be good? No, they don't have a good defense. So they have to do to the best of their ability whatever they can to keep that defense competent. And even in the second half of the Atlanta game, the defense did give the Bucs a chance. In fairness, it was a, you know, the damage was done. But I'm not one of these people, oh, hey, we got rid of Mike Smith, it's all good, you know? And so I'm not saying I'm not optimistic, because I do think the team will play better. I think they will beat Cleveland. I really do. I think coming back home and playing a lesser team will be good for them after two consecutive road games against teams that are a little bit tougher. And I know Atlanta's only, what, 2-4, 2-5, whatever it is, but they're not, you know, they're better than Cleveland, I think. So two tough road games. Come home against Cleveland. I expect the Bucs to get right. And let's put it this way. If they don't, if for whatever reason it doesn't work out against Cleveland this weekend, then what have we all been doing here this whole time anyway? They go to 2-4 with four losses in a row, one of them to a Cleveland team. That's better than before, sure, but still is a team coming off an 0-16 season. And I know they got Baker Mayfield going and everything now, but it's a rookie quarterback. I mean, if they're 2-4 after all that, then, you know, there will be a shift in the tone of everything that you read in the media, see on Joe Bucks Fan, my show, Justin, the Joes, Ira, all, there'll be a noted shift in tone if the Bucks don't win this game on Sunday. Because even at 2-3 and they haven't played well and they've lost three in a row, it still feels like we're playing for things. Like, hey, you win this one, you're 3-3. You're right back in there. I mean, you know, you're grinding for a wild card like over half the league is, and that's fine. But you lose this one, and it's going to feel like one of those flying coffin type things again already. And the decidedly, I don't want to say eager tone, but the optimistic tone, or at least the hopeful tone that you hear from people like me or anybody else, is going to all of a sudden turn into, oh, well, matter of time type thing. I hope it doesn't get to that. I hope the Bucks win. I hope they're 3-3. I hope all is well. They could have won that Atlanta game, folks. Even after all that. And that leads me to my next thing. Jameis Winston making his first start. It kind of got buried, which is what I said when I was afraid was going to happen with these 12 games he's got as an audition to be the quarterback here or somewhere else in the league and get his next contract and all that stuff. And I said the one thing I don't want is for him to be playing from behind, you know, 28-3, 21, it would end up being 21-6 in this case. But I said I don't want him to do this every week when we're trying to evaluate a quarterback, and you can't do that when he's down 2-3 touchdowns late in the first quarter, early second quarter already. It changes the complexion of everything. And sure enough, that's where we were. And I thought Winston played a hell of a game on Sunday, and it still amazes me. And, you know, maybe I'm guilty of it too, but it's like camps have been delineated. You're either anti-Jameis or pro-Jameis, and it's almost like politics these days. Like, you're going to see it from your point of view, from your colored lenses, no matter what happens, and that's what you're sticking with. People ripped Jameis on Sunday for his performance. And, okay, yes, he had two interceptions. One of them was a bad interception, the first one. The second one, I thought, was an unfortunate break. You know, it's one of those, you know, back shoulder of the defender things where he's got his back turned, you're trying to throw it into your guy, and I thought there was interference on the play. But either way, that's normally an incomplete pass and nobody bats an eye. Instead, it hits the guy's helmet, it bounces straight up. You could say, oh, well, he shouldn't have thrown it. I don't think it was a bad throw. I think it was a bad break. The first throw was bad. Bad decision. He forced it downfield into double coverage, and it got picked off. Fine. Not even trying to defend that. But again, this is what happens when you're down 21-6, before you can get the damn popcorn bag open, you start to force deep balls. You start to maybe, where you'd normally think twice about throwing it, you're like, ah, screw it, I got to get this downfield, we got to score. You know, and I'm not saying that's what happened with Jameis, I'm not saying it's okay, because you still have to take care of the football. It was still early in the game, it wasn't time to force anything. But my point is, things get skewed. When your defense puts you behind the eight ball this badly and this quickly, things get skewed. Now, the defense, first of all, they know you're passing. Changes everything when they know you're passing. And when it's 21-6, they know you're probably passing. Number two, it changes your approach because you might not make the throws you would have made. You might not be as methodical. You might start to force things and get a little bit antsy. And again, doesn't make it okay, but you're naive if you dispute that or doubt that. And so he threw a pick. And even so, he threw four touchdowns and two picks. What did he complete? It was like 30-something of 41. I mean, over 70%, I think it was. You know. And then, on top of that, his avoidance of sacks, spinning out, running downfield, getting extra yards, taking... I mean, I thought he ran his ass off. I thought he balled his ass off. And yet, I look at comment sections, which is probably my first mistake. The day of the game, or I go on Twitter, or the... Oh my God, this just further proves he can't take care of the football. Can't believe the Bucs even brought him back. Would really be surprised if they brought him back next year. Just stuff like that I'm reading. That's idiotic. I mean, that really is idiotic. Like, if you think that, I'm not saying you're an idiot, but that's idiotic. As if these franchise quarterbacks just grow on trees, and make no mistake, he is a franchise quarterback. That doesn't mean he's perfect. But there was an interesting stat, because you know it really does come down to wins and losses, and our whole, the way we look at people comes down to wins and losses. If they win these games, Jameis is the greatest thing ever. But they're not winning these games, but it's not because of him. QBR is a rating system. You know all, there's a million of them, but we'll go with QBR here. And somebody tweeted out, looking at a bunch of different quarterbacks around the league, a sampling, and taking all of their best career games, 13. The 13 best career games by QBR for Tom Brady, for example. What's his record in those, his 13 highest rated QBR games, Tom Brady's record? You might be able to guess it because it's 13-0. So hey, the 13 best games he's played statistically as a quarterback, he won them all, who knew? Drew Brees is also 13-0 in his top 13 QBR performances of his career. Cam Newton is 13-0. Dak Prescott is 13-0. Matt Ryan's 12-1. He lost once when he played really well. It does happen. Marcus Mariota is 11-2. Again, you know, his team's not as good. He's lost a couple, even though he played really well. Jared Goff, 11-2. Carson Wentz, 10-3. You know what Jameis Winston's record is for the 13 best quarterback rating QBR performances of his career? He's 6-7! He's got a losing record for the 13 best QBR games he's played. What does that tell you about him? Nothing, because it's the 13 best games. We're using everybody's 13 best. What does it tell you about the rest of his team? 6-7! And maybe if he was 10-3 or 11-2, people might look at him differently, and it wouldn't make a difference because his performance wouldn't have changed. But when you have a defense like this, it affects how people look at you. And again, I'm just hoping the football people are smart enough to see through it with the Bucs. I think they will be. I don't think they're dumb enough to let Jameis Winston go. But for fans and people that rip, you know, even some media, oh, Jameis Winston, he's not the guy. Really surprised they're still trying to force. You know, I even saw somebody say, you know what? They have so much invested in him, I guess they just feel compelled to keep trotting him out there because why else would you? Why else would you? Because he's a top 10 quarterback in the league, you moron. That's why. It's unbelievable to me. Like, people really can't, like, there's offense and defense, and they're not on the field at the same time. Hockey? Okay, hey, he's not a good two-way player. That's different. Basketball? Oh, he doesn't play. That's the same people going up and down the court. Jameis Winston has nothing to do with the defense. And if you're unable to at least evaluate a guy's performance just literally based on when he's actually on the field alone, then lay off the commentary. And I'm not saying I know everything either, but for people that actually like aren't just thinking, oh, this guy's not the guy, I don't know what else to tell y'all. And again, it wasn't because he didn't play a perfect game. The two picks, one of them was bad, I thought. But other than that, he was pretty good, and I thought he went toe-to-toe with Matt Ryan, except Matt Ryan's defense, you know, actually made a couple plays. And the Bucs' defense, to their credit, in the second half, at least made a game out of it. And the Bucs had a chance to win that game. And let me tell you something. Catanzaro, changed the entire complexion of that game, missing his extra point. And I'm not saying the Bucks would have necessarily been able to tie it. You never know what would have happened if the things had been different. But hypothetically, you know, if the Bucks are down 3 instead of down 5, and they were only down 5 because they chased the extra point that was missed and then missed a 2-point conversion as well, you know, and the Bucks are driving at the end of the game, maybe they're able to kick a field goal and tie it. I'm not sure. And Catanzaro hasn't been as bad as Aguirre or anything like that, but it's still, I mean, it's just amazing to me how we can't find guys to just do the routine stuff. Like, the extra point thing, I know it's a little bit longer now, but it really shouldn't be an issue. And the first one, like Dirk Cutter said, like, you know, you score a touchdown opening drive, you're thinking, all right, hey, we got these guys, and they miss the extra points. Like, ah, well, it takes a little off of it. Takes a little edge off of it. And so, again, you know, if that doesn't happen, whole thing could be different. But they still had a chance. They could have scored. And they get down, to their credit, to the 20-yard line with barely any time and timeouts. They do it. They actually drive down there with 7 seconds to go. It should have been more, but Mike Evans, after making a big catch downfield right next to the stripe, it wasn't like he was in the middle of the field and, like, scratched and clawed to get to the boundary and just couldn't get there. He was standing right by the sideline, tried to turn up field for a few more yards, literally with the white paint just yawning at him right next to him. Couldn't be bothered to fall out of bounds. Cost us about 12, 13 seconds. A couple plays before the end. And that was really just a terrible mental play. But even still, they're on the 20. 7 seconds left. Now, they opted to go with that crazy-ass play that almost worked, but still is pretty low percentage. With 7 seconds left, what I would have done personally, because the clock was stopped, they had spiked it, I would have thrown a cheapo. You know, Atlanta's going to give you a cheapo, a 5-yard out, a 7-yard out, whatever you can get, just a quick one to the sideline where the only way you either catch it and fall out of bounds or it's not even a completed pass. I wouldn't risk anything. But they're, you know, they're guarding the end zone, so their DBs were laying off and giving them that. Excuse me. They could have gotten 5 to 7 yards. And just get down to the 13, 14-yard line. Even that's not high percentage, but it's a little bit better than the 20. I think from the 20, your chances are tougher. You get down, and then your final shot is score from the 13 or 14. That's not exactly ridiculous to conceive of. I would have done that. I would have lined up, gotten a few yards, gotten out of bounds, and you still would have had probably 2-3 seconds left. One more play, basically. Then I would have tried whatever my, you know, rabbit out of the hat play is, whether it's that same one or something else. But you can score from the 13, 14 yard line with one shot at it. It can be done. It's not, again, still high percentage, but it's much higher percentage than what they did, which was kind of fun to watch. And quite honestly, if it had worked, it would have been one of the most amazing endings in NFL history. But as it is, ball ain't round. It'll bounce funny on you. I think if Adam Humphries makes his catch cleanly from Jameis, he might score. It would have been kind of a rodeo into the end zone with people on his back, and maybe he gets to the paint and maybe not. And I certainly think if he's able to hit DeSean Jackson with a clean one, Jackson's got a very good chance. Although, again, he would have been hit before getting to the stripe. Could he have made it or not? We'll never know. It's not worth overanalyzing a play like that too much. It's a stab. They missed. Bucks lose. Oh, and another thing I wanted to address, because I saw a lot of people commenting on this, on our own Joe Bucks fan, as well as in other places. Third quarter, Bucks down by 8. Gerald McCoy and Quan Alexander caught dancing on the sideline to whatever music was playing or something like that. Just kind of, you know, grooving a little bit, whatever you want to call it. I barely noticed. You would have thought these guys were losing by 45 points and were having a birthday party on the sideline. Like, people take this stuff so seriously. And hey, I think it's pretty clear. You know me, and you've listened to this show if you're listening to it. You know I take it seriously too. I love the Bucks. But people, get over yourselves. Who cares if guys are dancing on the sidelines? Some people were like personally offended. I can't believe I have to watch these guys dance when the team's down 8. They should be more serious and focused. Really? Like, do you really think that's a problem? Like, again, if they were down by 50 points and one of them just gave up a huge play or something, and they act like they don't even care, I get that. But you're down by 8. It's a good game. They had just gotten a couple stops, and they're dancing a little bit on the side. Like who cares? Like, why would that really bother you that much? Think about it. Think about it. And then Jason Pierre-Paul goes on his, you know, his player show on the radio, gets a call about it, and he's right there with y'all. He says, quote, "I'm sorry you had to see that. We as players have to do a better job checking ourselves." No, you really, Jason, you don't. All you have to do is perform between the lines. That's all you have to do. You don't have to, you know, a man once told me, when I was getting a little bit too into this stuff myself once upon a time, he said, "Hey, you know, there's not a patient lying on a table in front of you here. This is football. It's a game. It really doesn't matter. Like, the outcome of the game, it's entertainment. We hope the Bucks win, but your life, they're not going to go pay your bills. They're not going to write your term paper for you that you've got coming up later on. You got a life to lead out there. Enjoy the game, then when it's over, go lead your life." Seriously. Like, the Bucks didn't allow 35 points because Kwan and Gerald McCoy were dancing on the sideline. And again, there's a time and a place to, like, know your spot where maybe it is a little bit overboard. But that wasn't it. They're down by one score in the third quarter. So what? And it's not like they were on the ground doing the worm or something like that. My God. I mean, again, like, reading the comments, even one of the Joe Bucks fan articles was like, oh, it was the one where they talked about Mike Smith being fired and Mark Duffner being promoted. And in the comments, I go in there and read it. And it's, "Oh, well, that's great. I'm glad we hired a new guy. But whatever you do, just make sure he knows not to let the players dance on the sideline. Oh, my God." You know, what? Seriously? Like, do you really think that matters at all? It doesn't. I can spoiler alert, it does not. Okay? And the same thing with the bye week. There was a report I remember seeing, you know, a couple of the guys went fishing or something on the bye week. Or it was on the weekend of the bye week, like on Sunday. And people were like, "Oh, they ought to be in there studying. Blah, blah, blah. They can't believe that if they got time to fish, they don't have time to make a tackle." So now we're going to govern guys' personal lives on the bye week, because it's that important for them to serve us to help the Bucks play better. And by the way, again, it's your bye week. You can go fishing if you want to, or whatever the hell it is you do. There's not a patient lying on the table, number one. Number two, sometimes going fishing helps. Sometimes dancing maybe helps. Maybe puts you in a better place. Bucks defense didn't play half bad in the second half. All right? But third of all, whatever it does or doesn't do, it doesn't matter enough to get that worked up about it, okay? Like, it really doesn't matter enough to get that worked up about it. So, all you hard asses out there, many of whom probably have never buckled a chin strap, want to tell guys how to act on the sideline. Again, you want to judge them how they play on the field? Fine. Fine. That's what ultimately matters. And if the Bucks had completed that crazy play at the end and won the game 35-34, then, you know, you probably wouldn't have noticed any of this. You know, winning is all that matters. But just have a little perspective here. And I'm guilty of it, too. I'm not trying to, like, lecture anybody, okay? I'm guilty of it, too. Have some perspective. We want the Bucks to win. But these guys, it's their job. They're working. If they got traded to the Bears tomorrow, then they'd be playing for the Bears. It's not like being a fan. So don't project onto them. Judge them on their performance, fine. But what Kwan and Gerald McCoy were doing was not a big deal. And that doesn't mean it nothing is a big deal. Sometimes guys do go too far, or they lose their perspective on where, you know, in the game they are, in the situation, and they, you know. And I get that. But just way too much of an overreaction to all this stuff. So, I don't think there's any need to freak out about it. I do expect the Bucks to play well with the Browns team coming in here that, again, has not looked good after looking, what was that Thursday night game a couple weeks ago where Mayfield made his appearance after coming in to replace Tyrod Taylor, and he lit it up and they came back and won. It was, oh my God, the Browns, it's a new look Browns. Again, they're better, but they're still a team, the Bucks. This is one of those, like that Lupe Fiasco song. If you are what you say you are, then have no fear. The camera's here. You know what I'm talking about? There's the Bucks. If we're going to have any chance of doing something this season, and I hate to always, like, overemphasize one game. Like, people say, oh, this is a crossroads. This is a critical game. There's 16 games, and a lot of times people go too far, especially early in the season, with the importance of a game. But that game against Atlanta was certainly a game that would have changed our perspective quite a bit if they had won. They would have been 3-2 and 2-0 in the division, and both on the road in the division 2-0. Would have been a huge win. They didn't get it. So now here we are against Cleveland. And yeah, this one does feel like if they lose, the season kind of peels off in a different direction. And, you know, everybody on that staff knows, and they all want to stick around. Like I've told you before, if you've heard maybe, I've got some neighbors who know one of the assistants on the team, and I'm not going to get into who it is or anything, but the point is, like, she tells me, because she talks to the wife, and she's like, oh, yeah, they're really worried, you know, they really like it here, they're hoping they can make this work, and now, you know, this is last year when they thought they might get fired. You know, oh, they're going to get fired, they're not sure. It's a tough life. Look, coaches sign up for it. I'm not trying to have a pity party for the coaches, but my point is, like, believe me, this matters much more to them than it does to us from a personal standpoint. This is their livelihoods. If they lose this week, everybody on that staff, everybody in that whole deal is going to be, oh, no, you know, do I have to pull my kids out of their school? Do we have to start looking somewhere? What are we going to do? This and that. There's a lot of stuff at stake here in people's lives, well beyond just us as fans. So if the Bucks lose to the Browns at home to make their fourth loss in a row after a 2-0 start, people are going to be, you know, again, turning in a different direction when they look at this team. Now it's going to be all about, it's going to feel like a death march, quite frankly, until the Bucks start winning again. We'll see. So I'll be looking for a better performance from the defense, which I said I would already be looking for, even if Mike Smith was here. I expect that. Jameis Winston, you know, to me, all he's done is prove his worth in that first start. But again, it's a 12-game body of work for him. This is game number two. So far, so good. Who will be coaching him next year? I have no idea right now. So email me if you want to. If you have any thoughts, I love hearing from you. I'll read it on the show next week. My email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com. That's bobbygameday@yahoo.com. Twitter, @bobbygameday. Until then, I want to thank all of you for listening. As always, I appreciate you giving me your time. I hope I made it entertaining. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this outlet and allowing me to get in front of all y'all and do this show. And let's have some fun Sunday. The weather's supposed to be, I think, a little better, right? A little cooler if anybody's thinking of going to the game. I mean, any time now, it's going to not be 90, I swear. And these Sunday at one games are hard enough, but they get a little bit easier as the season goes on. When it's not 93 in October, which it usually by now has started to cool a little bit. But I think we're right on the cusp of it. So just, you know, get out there. Should be some fun tailgate with your friends. Or just watch it at home and have some buddies come over. But as always, like I say, use these games as a chance to have fun, to feel good, to get together with friends and people maybe you don't see as often as you used to. Maybe you've got kids now or whatever and you don't see your buddies as much. Get together for the ball game. And remember, it's entertainment. It's fun. The Bucks aren't going anywhere. Win or lose, we got another one next week. Until then, enjoy the weekend, stay safe, go Bucks, beat the Browns, and wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.